next guest on Unplug It has a fascinating story. Started off at the Hawks, and ironically, final coach at Hawthorn was St Kilda legend Alan Jeans, and premiership coach, was then traded across to Hawthorn along with another traded across from Hawthorn with Russell Morris to St Kilda, and at St Kilda at the time was a Hawthorn legend in Peter Hudson. So it's interesting those two worlds colliding between those two clubs. Now does terrific work around the St Kilda past players, and we'll chat a lot about that as well. I speak of Sean Ralph Smith. Sean, thanks for jumping on Unplug It.
You're welcome, Darren, and guys, thanks for having me.
So go back to the start of the journey. Obviously, you're at Hawthorn, incredibly powerful side. They won a premiership in that first season in 88. They'd win another one in 89, and their dynasty, if you will, looked like it came to an end in 1990, even though they'd win a flag again the following season. But can you sort of take us through your Hawthorn days and then how you came across with Fly to join the Saints?
Yeah, sure. Look, fantastic time straight out of school, I guess. If you look at the record books, my career started at Hawthorn in 88 when I played my first game, but I was there from 85 because everyone had a long apprenticeship. Played most of the year in the under 19 straight out of school and a couple of games in the twos in 1985, and then got on the list somehow when it wasn't as formal as it is now. They just invited me to state, come back, played a lot of twos in 86 and 87, and just saw all my mates starting to debut through that period at Hawthorn. And basically they were in the grand final every year that I was there, except the last one. So, you know, it was just eyes wide open, loved being there, trained really hard, played a lot of games in the twos. I think I had the record at one stage, played nearly 100 games in the twos. In 87, I was really close and then tore my groin. And so I missed the balance of that year. And then in 88, made my debut. I guess that's the start of the St Kilda story, because I debuted in like round 21, 1988. That was the year they won the grand final by 88 points. Kicked three on debut and got dropped the next week. So that was tough. And look, I just took it on the chin because I knew the people that were coming back were premiership players, etc. But in the day that I played my debut, we played Hawthorn against St Kilda, and I played on Ken Sheldon in his last year. And he remarked at saying that he knew I had some speed because he couldn't keep up with me, and I played well that day and kicked three goals. So it was a couple of years later after I played three games in 1990 at the Hawks, and then they decided to trade me to St Kilda. And because I'd played a lot of footy with Paul Hudson, and Peter Hudson obviously watched that in the twos at the time before Paul made it big time in the ones and played in the premiership. So he knew that I could play a bit, and Ken Sheldon played on me. So they invited me across, and I was happy for the opportunity.
Sean, when that happens, and the club obviously makes a trade for you, were you given any type of assurance that you were going to get games in the ones at that point, or was it still very much kind of you got to earn your stripes and that sort of thing? Like, what was that like for you as a player, and what were those conversations like, I guess, prior to you arriving at Moorabbin?
Now, the conversations were they believed I could play, and so therefore there was an opportunity to play senior footy. There was always talk that if you're just on the edge at Hawthorn when they're in the grand final every year, then you'd probably get a game at many other clubs. So, but you still had to earn it, and I always had that view. And when I got across there, I remember just remarking to some friends, I said, there's some superstar players here. And they're like, oh, yeah, right. I'm like, Nathan Burke is a star, and he wasn't then. I said, Robert Harvey is unbelievable, and he sort of wasn't quite Brownlow medal form there. And Lowy and Spard and Plugger were all there, which people knew about. And sort of that proved to be the case, that it wasn't that easy to get a game. But I did establish myself at St Kilda. Injury stopped me from playing more games there, because every time I got the team, I sort of got injured. And at the end, I played 30-odd games over the 4 years. And in that time, I had two ankle reconstructions. So I loved it. We played finals, felt really part of the club, and played much more senior footy. So it's a better feeling, obviously, as a footballer when you're in the team rather than, you know, on the edge, even though I loved my time at the Hawks. But playing senior footy is what it's all about. And I was shattered when I got delisted in 94, but you know, I'd slowed down. I had too many injuries to enable me to keep playing at that level. And so that was it. So it was sort of a 9-10 year career in the AFL for an unremarkable 34 senior games.
the 34 to most people get to play, but it was still very suburban back then when you were playing, and the clubs were very, as we're saying, quite small compared to what we see these days. But how was the transition from, I guess, Glenferrie to Moorabbin? Was there did you notice a stark difference between the two clubs? Was there something that really stood out between the two that you were, had to adjust to, or was it, what was the thing that stuck in your mind the most when you took that change?
Look, it probably seemed a little bit different, but Hawthorne's gym was old, under the stand, exactly like St Kilda's was at the time. The club was more successful, so I guess they had more money, but they weren't giving it to me. They were giving it to the superstars. I just remember, if you're asking that particular question, at Hawthorne, they paid our health insurance, and at St Kilda, they didn't, and I was annoyed. But, you know, if you play senior footy, you make a few dollars more than when you're playing in the twos, so that makes a difference. So that it was really just the opportunity, and I love playing under Kenny. In the end, Stan took over from him, and he was a great assistant coach when he was there too. And unfortunately, he was the one that had to let me go. But, you know, I don't blame anyone. And I guess I now lead the past players. And one of the things we say, the past players of St Kilda, one of the things we say when we try and get past players back to the club is it is amazing how many past players leave the club and never want to come back. Right? Because they got sacked. And it's like, hey, we're a room full of people. We all got sacked, you know? The only person that was offered a new contract and didn't take it, I say, is Lenny Hayes. And I think that's a true story. So we're always cajoling players to come back, some of whom come back happily, but plenty leave with a chip on their shoulder. And 5 years later, the people that did that to them aren't there. The administration has changed. The club is still there and the club wants to embrace them. So our job is to make sure that they have that lifelong sense of belonging to the club. And when they come back, it's just like, we're all equal. You know, we all played. Some of us played 200 games and won a couple of Brownlows, and some of us played 34 and some of us played one. But we welcome everyone back, and we want to make sure that we can make them feel welcome. And at the same time, we're putting events on. We're raising money a little bit, and we're trying to do more, and we're trying to support those in need as well through the past players. So we've done a lot of work in that space as well. So long answer, but love being involved.
Further to that, obviously, when you arrived at St Kilda as a player, there were a lot of new faces from other clubs that year as well. Stephen Newport, Brian Wilson, they mentioned Fly. I think Tim Peakin might have been in his second year at the club at that point. You had Gilbert McAdam, who played some senior footy in South Australia, come across. In terms of making you feel welcome, who were the guys that embraced it the most? Because obviously that's a challenge as well, not just coming into the system, but coming into a new system. Were there guys, be it Spud or some of the other senior players that might have been around the club at the time, that were particularly accommodating?
Spud made you earn your stripes, so he wasn't your best mate when you turned up. He probably thought I was a smart-ass sort of ex-Hawthorn player that needed to prove myself. I was good mates with Spud through the time eventually, but he certainly made you earn it. I was really good mates with Tim Peakin, and Dean Anderson is my best mate. We were best men at each other's wedding, and he played in premiership to Hawthorn, then came to the Saints the year after me. So, and we're still best mates to today. So there was a good group of players. David Strooper came through. He's still a good mate. Sort of that sort of group of people. And then more broadly, you know, I still see Berkey around. I still see Harves at the club and lots of those players, and Lowy that we're mates with through the past players, because we stay together.
I have some really strong memories of your kind of running game in 1991, in that first year at the club. Obviously, the best year the club had had in decades. What are your memories of that year? And then I guess that run home, you know, through the second half of the year into the first finals campaign for a long time. What are your memories of that, and of not, I guess, being part of it on the field?
Yeah, look, that was my first year there, and I played, 10 or 12 games and missed out in the finals, but could just see it all happening. And I guess for me, the run was always in me, but I was a forward at Hawthorn, and Saints made me a backer. So it was just a complete change. And I I had trained on Dermot Brereton for 5 years at Hawthorn, and so literally, effectively, was a centre-half back chasing a centre-half forward when I was meant to be playing on him as a, you know what I mean, training two forwards together. So I adapted to the back line well. You know, I remember Pecco coming through and he became a really good mate and really running hard and training really hard and pushing him to train hard and push himself because he was always playing within himself, I sensed. He proved to show that he could do it himself and play for the next 20 years sort of thing, which was great. But no, I guess it made me really want to be part of it the following year, which I eventually did get on a bit of a run and play some games in a row and at my spot for the finals in 92.
So we hear about, I guess, all these big names that were around that time, that sort of thing. Is any of the sort of, I guess, lesser names that you might go, this player was a fantastic player, maybe didn't play enough footy. There was someone who did just extraordinary things at training, but maybe never showed it on the game day. Or is there any players that really stood out to you that, I guess, necessarily weren't the ones in the spotlight?
You know, there's lots of players that came and went and played really good games at the time. You know, Darren Burke was a star in terms of really strong over the ball, and he ended up playing plenty of footy. I love Joffa Hilton, who came and went and ended up at Melbourne. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, and really tried to help him in his last few years. But love the way he went about it. But in the end, I think it was the players that had the talent and the coaches started to get the best out of them that really turned the team around. It was, you know, the core of those, that centre line was amazing, and it was just making sure we had enough talent around the edges to feed them make it happen.
How good could Tim Allen have been on that note? I know a lot of Saints fans from that era talk about, you know, he played some really good games, got injured a bit, he'd pop into the side, kick three, go out. He looked like a guy that had a fair bit of talent.
Yeah, look, if people don't remember him, a bit like Eric Hipwood, you know what I mean? Like, talented, can be awesome on his day, and then sometimes not perform to his best. I'm not sure why he ended up probably finishing early, but it might have been injury or whatever. But you know, he had enormous talent, big left footer, could take a mark and judge the ball well. So, he certainly was a talent at the time.
You mentioned earlier kind of walking into the club and seeing some of the guys and being amazed at how good they were. And Nathan Burke was a star and those sorts of things. Like, what was it about Burkey in particular that made you kind of stand up? Like, we've all seen his kind of tough and nuggety, you know, play, and I think for anyone who watched him for, you know, 20 years knows why he was a star. But from your perspective as a young bloke walking in and just kind of being surprised by this little bloke, what was it about Burkey that kind of made you stand up and take notice?
Well, I guess I wasn't young because I had 6 years under my belt. You know what I mean? So I was probably older than him. I don't know. I might be a year or two older than him. Not sure. I just remember going as hard as I could at training and in games, and sometimes going as hard and as low as I could to get the ball. And if he was there, he'd beat me. And sort of wasn't used to that. And I think everyone would have that story, wouldn't they? And just so how hard he would go to get the ball and then get it out. And obviously, you know, halves with the talent, it was just obvious as he got older and better. But I'd been around literally a team that had been in the grand final every year and had played in two or three premierships in that time, 86, 88, 89. So I knew what it took by watching them, not by doing it, not claiming that, being around it. And so I sort of probably had a good eye for the guys that were going to be able to compete at that level.
Now, how easy was Tony Lockett to hit on the chest? Was it just a case of you just put the ball up and he would get to it, or you made sure that you kicked it to the right spot? Which one was it more a bit of a case of?
Yeah, look, you're stealing my thunder. If I ever tell the story about who would make you look good, you run down the outside flank, kick it to the hot spot. If he was anywhere near it, he'd mark it. So he made you look good. Yeah, I wasn't a pinpoint pass like a Darren Pritchard kicking to Jason Dunstall. I'd be running down occasionally and just put it in the general direction. And back in the day, you'd only have one bloke on him, right? Mm. That would happen these days. You know, you'd have the intercept floating around and someone else bodying him, and it'd be much harder for all of those guys now. But back then, put it in the air and he'd mark it. That's good. Goal assist.
In terms of, I was going to say, in terms of that, with that transition that you mentioned into the past player's role, obviously Spud had a big role in that. He did a similar job with coaches, obviously, post his Richmond days. And some of the stories you've told around guys like Hilton and these sorts of players, and the fact that some leave the game disillusioned and then obviously come back and getting around the guys that they used to play with and understanding that those who make the decisions might be there temporarily. How important was it to you to go from being a past player to somebody who's a senior part of the Past Players Association in bringing these guys in and making sure that everybody is connected? We obviously had events like the 150th a couple of years ago where obviously there was a great presence.
Yeah. Look, to me, it was a role that was suggested to me I could help with. And so I was working with Matt Finnis at the time, and Russell Morris had been doing it for a while, and he was looking for someone to hand over to. There's a bit of imposter syndrome there, right? I played 34 games in 4 years at the club and I'm leading the past players. But, and all of a sudden I'm talking to lots of other players that were, you know, my heroes. I was a Saints supporter growing up, you know, Jeff Saru and Mick Burns and Stuart Trott and all of those players, George Young, who I've met, you know, all of those guys that I had their numbers on my back when I was a kid. And some, you know, sometimes they're talking to me asking for my guidance. And I'm like, well, I'm just there trying to do a job and bring people together. We've got a really good committee. So not claiming that it's just me, but, you know, Jack Daniels and Justin Peckett and Russ Holmesby in the club, you know, with Georgie Day and Brett Bowie's on there now. And, you know, there's the whole heap of crew that do all the work to get people together. And so it gives me a lot of satisfaction that we have events where 200 people turn up, that we can raise some money, that we can have an 80s day that we're just working on now where the past players from the 80s come to a game and get together and really enjoy it. You know, we're doing that in a few weeks, and we've been doing that ever since with Bunnaburn leading that crew, because you have to have people that connect different eras. So I'm sort of with the 90s era, and we've got Bowser and Pecco, and we've had Stevie Milne that connects the 2000s, and they're harder to get back because they've left more recently. And the 80s crew is Bunner, and the 70s crew is Johnny Bennett and others. And Ross Smith does an amazing job with the 60s crew. So we connect. So whilst I might be the leader, you need all those people that get those people connected and brought back together. And Simon Meehan's done a great job too, because he's been there a long time in connecting the 80s. So it really is a committee effort that just makes people feel welcome, whether they played 200 games or 10, and they're on the committee because they want to help out.
Now, you talk about being a Saints fan growing up and having these St Kilda player heroes and going on to play for the club yourself. I'm told that the majority of your family are also St Kilda people, St Kilda fans, except for your son, who plays for Richmond but was a Hawks fan, who I assume never saw you play for Hawthorn. He's not old enough to have seen you play for Hawthorn. And your nephew, Jonty, who was a St Kilda supporter and who's now a Pies fan. Tell us how you allowed this to happen.
Well, we're a Saints family growing up. And so my boy, Hugo, had a Saints jumper when he was at in kinder, I guess. But when Hawthorn nearly folded, I decided to buy a membership. And what I did is I bought a junior membership once Hugo was born in 2001. And so he was confused because he got a St Kilda jumper, but got this merch pack. You know, you get all this stuff from the club. There's the Saints stuff every year. And so when he realized that maybe Hawthorn was an acceptable alternative and he saw Buddy and he just said, I'm barracking for Hawthorn. And so I argued with him for a while, but it was an acceptable alternative in my eyes, given that I'd played there. And so we took that up and we went to the 2008 grand final together. It was amazing. It was such a great day to be there with your seven-year-old son and see them win amongst up in the bleachers. You know, it was just such a great day that I absolutely loved it. So, you know, I'm pretty conflicted when I watch footy. When I watch St Kilda play Hawthorn, I forget who I'm barracking for. Or if I watch Richmond playing Hawthorn or whatever, my boy's out there, I'm just barracking for Richmond and nothing else matters. when he's not, I just forget who I'm barracking for because I have an affinity for, you know, I guess three clubs.
Now, Arthur Secunda, what was the career path there? Did you get to play much more? Did you, get to play with any older mates that you might have grown up with or anything like that? Where did the path follow after St Kilda?
It was just always going to be going back to Old Halebury because I went to Halebury and played there. And so I went back for 1 year. My knees were shot when I went back there. I could hardly train, hardly run, but I played 1 year. And we won a B-grade premiership in 1995. And then I retired and we all had to work back then as footballers. So I was working at Shell on a graduate program and had a pretty good job. And I decided I wanted to coach because I wanted to learn how to manage people. So I was either going to do an MBA or coach footy. And I got a job coaching Old Melbourneians in A-grade amateurs for 1 year. Got to a prelim. Applied for the job to coach the St Kilda reserves the following year. Missed out to Peter Russo. Had 1 year experience, so sort of thought all my reserves playing experience might have got me over the line, but it didn't. And then I quit footy coaching and went and studied, and I did an MBA with a view to sort of furthering my career. So that took me on a path into consulting and then business management. So I sort of just watched footy from afar until I started coaching the juniors with my boy. So that's what got me back into footy, obviously at a completely different level and environment, but absolutely loved that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but before you took up your role with the Past Players Association, you did some consulting on the building of the DFC, the Danny Frawley Centre.
Yeah.
Is that right? How did that come about? And I guess as an extension of that, having played in defence with Danny, with Spud, what does he mean to you?
Yeah, that was you remember when you hear what had happened when Danny had passed away and I was working. I'd kept in touch with Danny. I rode bikes with him, so I'm a cyclist, and he lived nearby. So we weren't best mates, but I saw him often enough and had kept in touch with him. And I've got a mutual friend that's really close to Danny, and we knew that he'd had his ups and downs, and I'd check in with Mark Foley, his mate, and say, "Where's Spud? How's he going? Whatever." And, you know, he hasn't been out for a while and all that. So we always had that connection. So I ended up finishing up a job and I was looking for my next opportunity, and I was just talking to Matt Finnis, and there was an opportunity that came up, and he knew I had the skills and experience and they wanted someone to develop the way the Danny Frawley Centre was set up and the operating model, with the pull downstairs and the mental health upstairs, etc. So I got involved in some alternative designs as they went through. It had all been designed and approved, but it was sort of, we tweaked it a little bit downstairs and loved what I did. Learned a lot about mental health, set up the first programs that ran there and engaged all the third parties that got it happening. And at the same time negotiated third party management of the whole facility downstairs, which was the pool, the gym and the hydro spa. So that was a good experience. And through that time, Matt said, there's an opportunity in the Past Players for you to join them. Why don't you go and see what you can do?
Now, the team at the moment, apart from waving a magic wand and getting no injuries, is there something you look at and you go, that's where we need to improve at the moment? Is there something that you go, that's kind of player we might need to chase next? Or where do you think there might be a couple of gaps, and what do you think we're doing good?
Look, I like the fact that we're having a crack and bringing some players in. It's really hard when you can't get your players on the park. You know, I know the King boys pretty well from school. Pretend I know them. They know who I am because Hugo played with them, and I see Max in the street. Would love to see him out there. You just have to look at what Ben can do to know that Max will come good one day and will love it. And then all the other forwards around them will walk taller. So if you can get our best players in the park and some of the young players that are coming through, there's a great nucleus there. I got smashed by Hawthorn on the weekend, but some of the best players were sitting up in the stands watching, and it only takes two or three or four of your best players to be out and you're nowhere near the team that you could be. So they're starting to play a bit more free-flowing football. Some of the forwards are making a difference and the young players on ball are doing well. So we just need patience. And Saints supporters, we've always had it because it's been forced upon us the need to have patience, but I can see that they're getting there.
Sean, two last ones from me before we let you go. Quick one, who's better, Tony Lockett, Jason Dunstall? You can only pick one.
Does pick or stick?
Whatever you've got.
Jason Dunstall, interesting. Last one, I guess on a more serious note, the work you do with the Past Players Association is really important. Particularly when you talk about your life after footy and guys being exited out of footy clubs, you know, against their wills in a lot of cases, and you're not understanding why and whatever. You mentioned briefly at the top of the show being exited by Stan. What's your memory of, I guess, that conversation of that afternoon, that day, whatever it was? And I guess, is that what stuck with you when you kind of decided to take up this role, or like, what was that moment like for you?
Look, I had a career. I was just devastated because I love playing footy. And I guess I remember not being picked in the second last round of the year in my last year in 94 and realizing that was it. So it wasn't, it sort of, you know, I knew in advance, not being told. It wasn't like in the exit interview, I sort of knew my knees were shot. So, but it's always been real. My dad drilled upon me that I needed to get my degree and I needed to have a career outside of footy. So I missed two footy trips to do university exams and I still hear about them. Japan and Hawaii. And my mates still talk about those trips and I wasn't there, but I got my degree. So, you know, I try and, when I was past players, we try and help, you know, the transition from Tony Brown to the past players. It doesn't really work yet, but Tony Brown, who's the player development manager, owns all of the livelihoods of those players, you know, almost against his will. And when they finish, they keep calling you. And he'll look after them and he'll look out for them and he'll put them in touch with the people and help them get careers or jobs or opportunities to study and those sorts of things. So as a past player committee, we're trying to take some of that work from him. And my goal is to raise enough money to actually pay someone as a case manager to help the transitioning of the players into what they're going to do in life after footy, and then check in with them, whether it's 6 months after they finished or 6 years. If they're having a hard time, it would be great if they knew that we could have some sort of facility to help them. So it was instilled in me with my old man. I see where people go off the rails when they don't have a career outside of footy. I'm making sure my own boy is studying as much as he might listen to me, but he is on the side whilst he's playing because you never know when it's going to end. And that's really important. And then it's one of the things I've done, and I'm sorry I'm going on a bit, but teaching young players how to network. Because when you're young, everyone asks about you. When you're at the footy club, everyone asks about you. How's your injury? How'd you play? How's this? How's that? And then when you mature a bit and the people that you meet through corporate and functions, et cetera, you'll learn, what if I ask him about him and what he does for a role? And then he'll remember that I've actually got some intellectual curiosity and maybe there's an opportunity that can come from that. And so you see these experienced players that have been around for 15 years. In the last 5 years, they're developing and curating relationships so that after footy, they can do something. When you're young, you don't even think like that. So those sorts of skills, life skills, it's hard to coach people to learn those, but it's really important when players realize that as soon as someone who stops asking about you, you ask about them, they'll be interested in you. Football's very me, so it's hard for people to learn that skill.
Yeah, and so important for players to obviously be ready for the fact that, you know, an injury or whatever it may be, your career might be over when you're 21 and you know, what do you do then when you've dreamt of obviously this all along, and such an important part of it. Sean, it's been great getting these insights. I think a lot of people that would have plugged in the tape of the 92 elimination final would know one of your best games for the club in a really pivotal moment. We won our first final in nearly 20 years that day against the Pies. But thanks for jumping on and sharing your stories and your journey with us today.
You're welcome. Great to meet you guys. Thank you for your time.